How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Welcome to another edition of Locked On NBA. Thanks so much for tuning in. Our guest today is Zach Harper. You probably, if you're a podcast listener, have heard him doing that on High on Basketball. If you haven't, well, but I just gave you another podcast listener who's better than this one, so you'll be good with that. You can also catch his writing at CBSSports.com. Zach does a really nice job on all of these, and we're really excited to have him on the podcast talking about the NBA as we record this. On a Tuesday, we'll probably post it on Wednesday, so I don't actually think the world will change, but you never know right. In this wacky league, but I always like to mention it's being recorded Tuesday afternoon, probably posting on Wednesday of the final kind of 10 days of the NBA season. It's, of course, brought to you by SeatGeek. Use your promo code LOCKED to get $20 off your first purchase. Download the SeatGeek app and find out all the ease of SeatGeek, whether it's heading out to a playoff game coming up in Major League Baseball. Download the SeatGeek app. You'll see the best and prices all available for you, and those are the prices. Use the promo code LOCKED. You'll get $20 back after your first purchase. Zach, welcome. Glad to have you.
Thanks for having me. Big fan. I know my friend Charlie, who is a huge fan of yours, will be jealous that I got on the podcast, so that's a big moment for me.
Charlie and I had a nice dinner. I heard that. Yeah, we had a good time. All right. So baseball opened.
Yes.
Which led me to go back to one of my favorite movies of all time, Field of Dreams and Bull Durham. And, of course, I had to pull out the Crash Davis scene of when he's asked, so what do you believe in? So, on a basketball level, what do you believe in regards to basketball, Zach Harper? And I'm not saying I'm Susan Sarandon and you're Crash Davis. Don't worry. This isn't going funky places. But what do you believe in basketball?
I do feel more like a Nuke Lelouch anyway, so that works. I definitely believe in the three-point shot. I believe in the volume score. I believe in the pull-up three. I believe in the back pick. I believe in the hammer play and long, slow kisses that last 3 days. That's the one.
Nice.
What about you?
Let's see. What do I believe in? I believe in efficiency.
Mm.
I believe in above average players. I believe in the 3-point shot. I believe in wing defenders, maybe more than rim protectors.
Oh, I like that.
I believe in good, solid picks. I believe in players that make their teammates better. I do not believe in the high-volume scorer, which we will start to discuss here in a minute. What else do I believe in? I believe that the possession in the second quarter is as important as the possession in the fourth quarter.
This I love, because it drives me crazy when we whinge over these final minutes of a game. I'm like, well, what happened during that 10-0 run in the second quarter? That's just as important. Why do we not care about that? And to that point, losing a game in March is the same as losing a game in November, which I think we should always remember, that these losses down the stretch are not choking as much as the choking happened in November as well.
So I think that's it. I'm trying to think if – I think that anything else comes to your mind on – I have various – you know what I also believe in? I don't believe in groupthink to my own fault.
Right.
The minute too many people believe something, I actually start to fight it.
Sure.
And I really think it's a flaw right now in the way the game's talked about, frankly. I think there's the elite. Nah, that's the wrong word. What's the word? There is a collection of deep-thinking basketball people that all think the same.
Right.
And I think it's a problem right now. I might be wrong, but I think it's a problem because I think too many people just kind of tip the hat.
Right.
And I even to the point of you can't play with two bigs. Why not? The Jazz are playing the Spurs tonight.
Grizzlies have done well.
Right.
The Spurs have done well with two bigs. To your point, this is why I love Ethan Strauss. So he's a good friend of mine in the first place, but he has done all this outside-the-box thinking on when it comes to just kind of reevaluating the NBA, where I look at it and I think, I've been maybe looking at this wrong the entire way. Maybe I've been caught up in the group think. So I appreciate the thinkers like that.
The other one, and then we'll get back to you, is that from a last podcast with Nate Duncan and Kevin Pelton that actually I hadn't really ever thought about that I'm thinking about more, is I may believe that analytics are better defensively than offensively.
Oh, well, that's interesting too, because there aren't that many great, at least available, defensive analytics.
So let me try to back this up.
Okay.
We have the Spurs,
yes,
who are playing completely non-analytical offense because what the offense they're playing right now, which includes a lot of post-ups, probably the second highest rate of post-ups of anyone in the NBA, a lot of mid-range shots, and they're the number three offense in the league. They still shoot the threes, but they're not analytically necessarily, but that's what matches their personnel. All these teams I've watched that have tried to match the Warriors' analytical style or the – I'm not sure helping themselves. I'm not actually even sure the Rockets sometimes are helping themselves by wedging the players that they have into their analytical style. But if you look at the Spurs defensively and the Warriors defensively and the Thibodeau Bulls defensively, the analytics on the defense is the same. And I'm beginning to wonder whether or not there's a real analytical model to taking away the corner three, taking away the rim, forcing in those mid-range shots defensively. Maybe you do it a little differently in different styles based on your personnel, but much more that than I would, hey, offensively, you've got to do this.
Well, this is why Boston's so interesting, right? Because they don't have a rim protector. I mean, I guess Amir Johnson's a decent rim protector, but they don't really have that. But they have incredible wing defenders, and they, I think, allow the lowest three-point percentage in the league. Maybe that changed after the Warriors game, but they don't allow a high percentage of threes, and they're a very good defense. And they don't really have – I mean, my favorite analogy is it's a bunch of – it's you have 11 Scott Kahns in an Ocean's 11 heist. Like, that's what Brad Stevens has done with the Celtics team, and that's kind of the brilliance of it, and it fits more of that model, at least from the let's take away the three, let's take away the corner three of the Warriors, the Thibodeau Bulls, the Spurs, and I think that, yeah, those defensive analytics probably matter much more.
We'll get to high-volume scores in a second, which you just touched on another item in there. By the way, the Celtics probably are, I love the above average. There's this – Brad Stevens is probably going to be the number two in Coach of the Year unless the league screwed this up with this whole Steve Kerr, Luke Walton. Have they retracted that yet? Because I'm waiting.
I hope so, because it's an awful way to do it. Like, you can't separate them.
Bob Myers is on the phone of the league saying, what are you doing right now, right?
Yeah, you have to change that entire process and send out a new ballot.
Okay, so I'm expecting the league will fix this mistake.
Yeah.
It just seems – so then Brad Stevens finishes second in Coach of the Year in all likelihood. But here's an interesting one on that. I think Brad Stevens is a really good coach. But didn't everybody in the analytics community have the Celtics as number two or number three in the East when the year started? Wasn't this
right.
So is Brad Stevens really actually coaching this? Like, this whole idea that Brad Stevens has taken this group and lifted it up by the back of its collar and lifted it to places it's never been before, it isn't contrary to what everybody in the analytics community said before. Tom Haberstroh, Kevin Pelton,
right.
They all had, John Schumann, I think, had Boston as this high-level team when the year started because of their mix of above-average players.
Well, that's the thing. I think that's where my difference with them comes is, one, I didn't expect as much. I expected them to be decent, but not the second-best team in the East. Also, I don't think their players are very good. Like, I think Avery Bradley's probably the best player they have. I'm not big on Isaiah Thomas, even though he's a high-volume scorer, because I'm kind of against short basketball players in the NBA. But for this team, I think they're not – I don't think Kelly Olynyk's good. I don't think Jared Sullinger's good. So when I see them doing well, I think, wow, he's doing a good job. So I think it's probably how you base their talent in terms of evaluating.
By the way, I believe in the Amir Johnsons and Taj Gibsons of the world too.
Yeah, I like Amir. I like Taj when he's healthy. This is why I was hoping the David Lee thing would actually work, because I don't want him out of the league. I want him to be somewhere in the league and have a decent role, a little bit more than what he's doing with the Mavericks. I thought Amir Johnson could kind of cover up for that. You just can't. He's not good.
Step away from Zach to talk about something else we believe in. SeatGeek. That's right. Download your app, SeatGeek. It's a free app on your phone, and it is the first place to look for tickets to a game, a concert, whatever it might be. You want to go to a Major League Baseball game this summer? You want to go soon? How about any of the NBA playoff games, or maybe it's a concert in town? SeatGeek covers it all. It's an app on my phone, and it's the easiest way. When we're traveling, I jump out. We're going to be in Denver. Rockies playing the Padres. SeatGeek to find out what tickets are the best. And here are the three things that separate SeatGeek from everybody else. One, every available ticket in one place, so you save time and you never miss a deal. Two,
Each ticket is graded based on value. Get the big green circle says, that's a good buy. Little small red dot, that's a bad buy. Don't buy that one. And then best of all, it's honest and upfront about the price. Unlike StubHub, SeatGeek shows you the full ticket price and never surprises you with checkout fees. Also, by the way, if you're really a planner, you can put in alerts to get information about upcoming games or events that you want to attend. So download your SeatGeek app. It's free. Then on the settings tab, add a promo code, enter in Locked, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you make your first ticket purchase. That's Locked, L-O-C-K-E-D, $20 to you after your first purchase. Download the SeatGeek app now and enter the promo code Locked. Thank you very much for doing that. Now back to CBS Sports, Zach Harper.
It's interesting. David Lee and Roy Hibbert, I think, have become the two poster children.
The dinosaurs.
Of like, right. Within like, but they went from like all-stars to dinosaurs in a blink of an eye.
David Lee was an all-star in 2013 over Steph Curry. And he made the team over Steph Curry.
Roy Hibbert was an all-star in 2014, right?
Something like that, yeah.
And they're both children of how the league's changed.
Would you take either player on a mid-level exception right now?
Well, I kind of thought that David Lee in Dallas may be reviving his career a little bit. But then again, Rick Carlisle seems to make everybody a play. Hey, Jose Juan Barea just won Player of the Week under Rick Carlisle. So either Rick Carlisle or Dirk Nowitzki makes every player a star at some point.
Isn't that funny, too? You talk about, you know, Brad Stevens is going to end up number two in Coach of the Year. I think there are plenty of options for that. But Rick Carlisle, like, who does he have outside of a 37-year-old Dirk and – Wes Matthews is kind of okay. He's revived Darren Williams a little.
Not really, though.
Defensively, he's okay. He's hitting threes. He can't hit a 2-point shot to save his life. But that team doesn't have anybody.
No.
And they're going to make the playoffs, most likely.
Well, the other day I was sitting down and doing, like, who do I think the five best coaches in the league are?
Right.
And frankly, being in Utah, I really think Quinn Snyder is incredible.
Yeah.
And I have access to every practice and everything,
right.
So I think I have a better view of how incredible he is. And I was trying to figure out where he might be in the coaching ranks of the league. And I think and I couldn't do it. The coaching in this league right now is incredible.
Well, it's funny, too. Like, you think about how high of an opinion we had on Doc Rivers 3 years ago. And now, I'm not sure he makes my top 10. Like, I don't know. And I don't know if I'm getting clouded by the executive Doc Rivers as opposed to the coach Doc Rivers. He did a good job without Blake Griffin, but how much of that is schedule? How much of that is Chris Paul? How much of that is DeAndre Jordan growing? What do you attribute that to? Is that the assistant staff helping those guys? Is that Doc doing it? But I'm not sure I'm big on Doc anymore.
I think they're number one in the league in points out of timeouts, which everyone loves.
Sure.
You know, we are in love with 13% of the game.
Right.
but we are in love with it. I don't know. I do think Doc Rivers, the GM, might make Doc Rivers, the coach, better.
That's
right?
True. Yeah, that maybe does a little bit more to credit him for what he's doing on the court.
This is one of the big things that I've been kind of – the Warriors tipped me off to this a little bit. I think Quinn does it here in Utah. I think Doc Rivers does it in L.A. I think this is a little bit of – and maybe this isn't that big a change. But so much of this league used to be talking about what players can't do instead of what
right.
they can do. And, boy, the Warriors have really taken a bench crew of guys that people didn't like. Let's not kid ourselves. Sean Livingston had been on five teams in 6 years prior, and some of it was the injury, but he didn't shoot the three. He didn't do – Barbosa was kind of out of the league because he was
right.
such a one-dimensional, head-down driver. Mo Spates is a shooting guard in a big man's body, wouldn't stop shooting. And they've embraced these players and said, okay. And it was interesting. I was talking to Jaron Collins, the Warriors' assistant, about it, and he said, you know what, we just are a team of specialists. And so if you get these guys to decide, hey, this is what I do really well, and you let them do it. And so maybe in the case of Dallas and J.J. Barea, he runs the pick and roll with Dirk as well as anyone. He's incredible. Just let him do it.
Yeah. No, it's true, and maybe you credit the Spurs to this as well, because Patty Mills is, what, a 5'10 shooting guard in a point guard's body? Like, what would you, on most teams, say, Patty, go do what you do. Just go out there and do it. You know, he's kind of a poor man, or maybe a middle management, J.J. Barea in that sense. Matt Bonner was a very useful player for them. Aaron Baines became a useful player for them. You know, they revived Danny Green's career, which was completely dead. I think you can find those guys and be like, look, you don't do this well, but if you do this in our system, and you do this well, you'll have a career. And now everyone else has kind of run with that, and the Warriors have just – I mean, to make Mo Spates, who I love, on a very entertainment level in terms – like, no, not in terms of, like, basketball, but just watching him in a game is wildly entertaining to me because of his reactions, because of the fact that he will shoot the ball before he even catches the pass. To make him a – a pretty decent component on a championship team, on a historic championship team, that's impressive.
So kind of the way like you're watching Rocky 7 to see how bad it's going to be.
Right, like Rocky
Entertainment.
Right, like Rocky 5, you know, Tommy Morrison, rest in peace. Like, not great, but you can kind of get into, like, all right, well, this is stupid. I can kill 2 hours
right,
with
okay,
this.
I just wanted to wonder, like, I was just trying to see what you, where we were putting that level of entertainment. All right, let's, who would be, if you're not putting Doc, just for interest, who are your five, this is hard to do.
It's tough, yeah.
Five best coach leads. So Pop.
Pop's in there.
So who are your five?
I would say Pop. I'm a huge Stan Van Gundy guy.
I'm not sure I even had him in my, you're so right.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I had him in my top 10.
Yeah, I love Stan Van Gundy. He's there for me. Carlisle's there. I would say Kerr is there. Either Quinn or – oh, God, I feel like I'm missing somebody big. Yeah, either Quinn or Stotts. I'm a huge Stotts guy now.
Not putting Stevens in there?
He's in the mix. He's maybe seven for me.
What about Vogel?
I love Frank, yeah.
I love Vogel.
Yeah,
see,
I love Frank Vogel.
Five.
Yeah, he's – all right. You could go anyone from Quinn, Stotts, Vogel in that five spot, and I would be pretty happy.
Spoelstra?
Spo is great. I got to cover him up close for a season, a little more than a season. He's great. Budenholzer, at least regular season. The playoffs weren't great, but Budenholzer's
in
there.
He's got the number one defense in the NBA.
Oh, you know what? Actually, here's my fifth, Steve Clifford. I love Steve Clifford.
Another? Right.
Yeah.
Which is what's interesting because I actually think what's happened is I actually think there's probably 20 good coaches in the league.
Yeah.
Really good, high level, elite coaches. And it's a little bit of change because we had 9 new ones for a year, right? And so they all – it was interesting to watch when they – sometimes it is exposed those coaches that aren't good this year in a really bad way.
Whitman, Sam Mitchell, Byron Scott, you know – those guys just –
Fred Hoiberg.
I'm willing to give the college to pro guy a year buffer.
I'm not sure I'm willing to give the college to pro guy. I think it still should be taboo. There's been only
one – well, it's not great, right?
There's only been one guy that's had any success. It's Brad Stevens, and it might have taken 3 years before he had it, right?
Right, exactly. But guys who have lost it too, like George Karl, no longer a good coach.
I'm going to give him a pass on that.
Because of the – well, the organization is
I just
horrendous.
Know enough stories about what he's been through this year that I would have tapped out also.
Yeah. I actually liked Jason Kidd quite a bit before this year. I think he has some bad personnel decisions. Like Greg Monroe and Michael Carter-Williams added to a roster. Not a huge fan of that. I don't think they're very good. But these guys, you know, they're not that many bad coaches. But you're right, the bad ones, and especially the ones who can't get with the times. Like Randy Whitman was playing pace and space this year but didn't know how to do it. And Sam Mitchell doesn't know what a three-pointer is. Byron Scott can't, you know, even control half of his locker room. I mean, the bad ones just really, you know, look like not even that they're in a bad position, but you look at guys who have failed recently who almost got blacklisted from the league, like a Vinny Del Negro. I'd rather have Vinny Del Negro or Mike Dunleavy Sr. under or over any of these guys.
Well, Vinny Del Negro is a really interesting one because his records, his team's performance – to hit where how he's been characterized are not they're not they don't match.
Right.
I mean, and frankly, Doc's never done anything more in LA than what Vinny Del Negro did, and Vinny had a younger team with arguably a less good roster until Doc screwed with it a little bit recently.
Am I wrong in this? He made the playoffs every year of his coaching career, you know? Two different spots, pretty easily made the playoffs. Like he's maybe a better coach. Like I think he's horrible at managing timeouts and stuff like that, but it doesn't mean he shouldn't coach.
Okay, here's the one on coaching that I have really had to change my tune on. Actually, I don't think I changed my tune on, but I think that I get lost on. Mm-hmm. Getting your guys to play hard is more important than any of these things.
Right.
Scott Brooks had Oklahoma City playing hard every night. Monty Williams had New Orleans playing hard every night. Tyrone Corbin, who was one of the least good X's and O's coaches that I've seen, had this Jazz team playing hard every night when he was here, and it was hard to argue that they should have won a ton more games.
Right.
If you play hard every night, yeah, there's things that a coach can do, but I don't know. I've had to – like, if Monty Williams ran a cross screen with Omer Asik and Anthony Davis one more time so that the other team ran big-to-big switch on the bottom, I was going to lose it. But you know what? They were better with him than they were with Alvin Gentry.
Surprisingly good offense, too.
Right. And you know what? They played hard.
Yeah. They played hard. They were pretty good in clutch situations. I think it's tough too because you would look at that team and you would say, oh, I'd really want Anthony Davis to take a final shot. And then Tyreek Evans is doing whatever Tyreek Evans does at the end of a game, and that can kind of skew things. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But with that team, you know, I wasn't a huge Monty Williams guy, but seeing the change, you know, injuries killed that team this year. But even when they were relatively healthy, Alvin Gentry didn't do a great job. And I don't know, that might be personnel, you know, for what he wants to do. But, you know, a guy like Ryan Anderson, a guy like Drew Holiday, Eric Gordon, like, you have guys that should be good with.
All right, let's switch a little bit. I want to get it back to high-volume shooters.
Sure.
Inside of coaching, there's a Billy Donovan storyline that's really very significant in this league. And in fairness to Billy Donovan, I think whenever we talk about him, we got to understand that Maurice Cheeks was on his bench, has had a hip replacement surgery that seems to have taken excessively long, but he just kind of is back on the bench a little. And then Monty Williams has the tragedy.
Right.
So all of a sudden, he doesn't have a staff, and I think staffs are far more important than people do. But with that said, Oklahoma City is 27th the league in defense in the final 5 minutes. They've lost more games going in the fourth quarter. Is this a Billy Donovan problem in Oklahoma City? Is this a makeup of a Westbrook-Durant combination that just doesn't work as well as – it's hard to say that. They've been so good. Like, what is going on in Oklahoma City? I have them pretty close right now to, like, as big – everyone says New Orleans' biggest disappointment of the year. I kind of have Oklahoma City maybe as my biggest disappointment of the year in the sense that they don't feel like a title contender, and they should be.
Right. I just wrote about them. We do this Road to the Finals thing on CBS of, like, how does this team even get to the finals? And so I did the Oklahoma City Thunder one today, and my biggest question was, all right, well, one, how much can you play Enes Kanter? You can't play him at the end of games. You can – you know, he's playing 20 minutes a game. Maybe that needs to scale back to 15. Like, he's a guy who can get you through the season of, like, all right, we throw him out there, he gets a double-double, this guy doesn't play as much, and he's rested for the playoffs. Like, you can kind of get through the season with him in that way, but once he gets to the playoffs, like, you can't play him. They don't have a shooting guard. You know, Andre Roberson is fine. Like, he's a good defender. He can't hit a jumper to save his life. Deion Waiters is just a complete wild card at all times. Anthony Morrow can't defend anybody. He can, you know, historically hit three-point shots, but they don't have that balance of where they can – you know, they're almost probably better playing off Westbrook and Cameron Payne, and Cameron Payne's a rookie, together in the backcourt rather than shooting guard.
They have two of the five best players in
right,
the league.
Right, but you have to space the floor, right? And they just can't – and Westbrook's such a bad three-point shooter.
But they're the number two offense in the league, so they should be fine.
Not in clutch situations, though. You get into a tight game, and especially since the All-Star break – they're worse than the Nets in clutch offense, and they're the worst defense in the clutch, period.
Since February 1st, actually.
Give it up 136 points per 100 possessions.
Is that coaching, or is that their personnel? Is that a chemistry issue?
I think
is that coaching?
I think it's everything. And I also think that Serge Ibaka not been that good this year, and they need him to be the Serge Ibaka who's winning, you know, or is top three in defensive player of the year, who's stretching the floor, who's, you know, good safety valve. I don't think he's been good. And I honestly think they should be playing Steven Adams way more and utilizing him way more than they do. And I just think it ends up being personnel, and Billy Donovan isn't ready to command that because of the assistant staff issues that you've mentioned. And for whatever – and then at the same time, like, this team's still pretty good, but they have to chase two historic teams in the same conference? It's almost unfair. And some of that's their fault. Some of it's out of their control. But
a lot of it's their fault.
Sure, but I mean – okay.
I mean, I hate to go back to it, but the Harden trade really.
Oh yeah, that's. I mean, ever since then, it's been kind of a disaster, right? And when they're healthy, they're a very good team. They're a borderline elite team, but one thing goes wrong, and they seem to just unravel.
Could anyone beat them in the first round?
Portland. Portland can give them a run. I don't think anyone else is good enough. I'm not buying this Houston matches up well with them and the whole Harden thing of them giving trouble if Houston gets up to the six. I don't buy that at all. But I think Portland is naive enough to not know that they should bend to this Thunder team.
Rick Carlisle versus Billy Donovan.
If Rick Carlisle had two more – if he had a healthy Chandler Parsons and Wes Matthews was what Wes Matthews was supposed to be, I'd buy in.
Quinn Snyder versus Billy Donovan.
I don't think they can handle Westbrook Durant – on a game-to-game basis, but in terms of the coaching, I like what Quinn could do.
I'm going to doomsday Oklahoma City here for a second, okay. Excessively. By some strange bit. So let me clarify first thing. Game one is won at home about 85% of the time. Mm-hmm. Game three is also won at home usually about 70% of the time. So let's say some fluke happens and Oklahoma City loses game two at home and falls behind in a series 2-1. Does the whole Durant situation, by that time, Warriors are up 3-0, right. Spurs are, and the national media just descends on them. It's like, does it? Is are they playing with more pressure than anyone in some sense?
Way more pressure because Durant's a free agent, and the Warriors want him. Like, they flat out want him. There are a lot of people in that organization who think they can get him this summer. That pressure alone, you know, there's the whole idea of the PR hit that Durant would take, and I believe it would be an evisceration, but I also think he would get over it as soon as they're winning titles, and he wouldn't care, and he wouldn't care what it does to his legacy. He would want to win. That pressure alone puts a 2-1 hole in the first round. Like, there's, I don't know that they could recover from that, because I also think that Westbrook, I love Westbrook. I think he's one of the five best players in the world. I think that he is over-scrutinized. I also think that if he goes down 2-1 in a series, he goes complete gunner mode and does not play a team game and puts up incredible stats while shooting a horrible percentage, and they maybe go down 3-1.
Well, one scout in the league said to me, if you're trying to scout Oklahoma City, don't look at Billy Donovan. Look at Russell Westbrook.
Right.
So to that point, you might be right. It's an interesting scenario. I just think they're playing with a – I think they'll be fine. I don't think there's any one of these four teams. I mean, Portland's going to be five anyway.
Right.
So it's not going to happen. If Memphis is six, they'll get a sweep, and maybe they'll gain confidence, and right. then suddenly they become a beast for someone to deal with. I mean, it's so weird because they're good enough to go – I think they're the one team actually as much as everyone talks about San Antonio. Durant can match Curry.
Yeah.
And so then all of a sudden, then someone's got to match Westbrook. Like, I think it becomes a very interesting.
They played them really well in those three games, too. Yeah, even that 15-point loss, it was close for the majority of the game. Got out of hand, I think, towards the end of the third quarter, and then they just couldn't recover. But they've played them really well. They've played them to the point where I think that I'm with you. Like, I think they can challenge them. But if that one thing goes wrong, I just don't know how they recover, because I don't think they have that. It's not that they don't have leadership. I just don't think they have that calm about them that all those other championship teams seem to have.
All right, why do you like high-volume scorers?
They're fun. Not my favorite player. One of my favorite players ever is Ricky Davis, because that guy was so into being Ricky Davis at all times that it didn't matter. Like, there's a YouTube highlight that's maybe my favorite one, and I get, like, everyone immediately goes to the triple-double. The best YouTube highlight he has is they are down 20 in a game. He's on Cleveland. They're down 22 to the Sixers. He gets a breakaway and goes between his legs, down 20 in the fourth quarter. Like, that was Ricky Davis in a nutshell right there. And there's just the guys, the volume scorers who don't turn the ball over, I love, because there's one thing that will happen. They're going to shoot. They're not going to pass. They're not going to turn the ball over. They're going to shoot, and that gives your team a chance to do something. And I appreciate that high volume scorer, like a Jamal Crawford, like Ricky Davis, like Carmelo Anthony to a much more superstar level. The impact
that Deion Waiters?
Deion Waiters does not qualify. You have to be able to hit a three-point shot, and Deion Waiters is a really bad three-point shooter. So I'll clarify with that. But those guys that just draw
you
the
really
attention
like
of
the guys. This Jamal doesn't Crawford doesn't fit into this. You really are describing guys that are actually bacon short of a BLT.
Yeah, but if they get that bacon, it's amazing. It's a high level of entertainment at all times. And that's why I like the guys who draw the attention of a defense in that way.
Does Al Jefferson count, or do they have to be a small
No, you
got to
be you got to be a shooting guard, basically.
You have to be a gunner.
Pretty much a gunner, yeah.
What about a shooting guard in a big man's body like Antoine Walker?
I love Antoine Walker. Absolutely. Like, the quote that there are no fours is my favorite quote of all time. That and the you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. But why do you take so many threes? Because there are no fours. It's one of the greatest answers we've ever received in any sporting – in any really just question and answer, period.
Antoine Walker is why I became a stats geek.
Because you were like, this guy's not any good. I've got to prove why.
Actually, Chris Webber, too, at the time. Like, I couldn't – I don't know how old I was. I'd have to go back and look at what years these are. I probably was 16, 17, 18. Mm-hmm. It's probably 86, 87, 88, something like that. Is that about right?
For Antoine?
No, he's probably 90s.
No, he's
90s. Because actually, 96. No, that's right. He's 96, so I'm 25. Yeah. Who wonder who it was
Maybe
earlier?
When he was at Kentucky?
No, it's early. You're right. Now, I'm trying to remember who else. There was some, but Antoine Walker, as I get older, but then
right.
there were some other players early who I had a very hard time understanding how these players could score 20 points a game
sure.
and their teams never won.
Right.
And so I really had to dig in to find out what the difference between one 20-point a game scorer was and a different
right.
and one. And that has always been that and the fact that just to share a personal story, because you'll get a chuckle out of it, as I think you follow baseball as well, is the fact that when I was 10 years old in 1980, my father was keeping whip for me as the evaluation of how I pitched in Little League, wow. And whip didn't exist. So that might have some influence on
sure.
it as well.
You know, I was just thinking about this either yesterday or today. I know RBIs aren't a fun stat anymore. We don't like those. They don't mean anything. But I miss when Juan Gonzalez was like, hey, you might break Hack Wilson's record this year. I miss that. I
well,
miss
any
it.
Hack Wilson reference is good.
Sure, yeah. Anyway, like he had 100 at the All-Star break or something like that, and it was like a big deal that he or Manny Ramirez or Jeff Bagwell, like one of those guys might break it. But now it's like it's not okay. You can't like RBIs. You can't like wins anymore.
All right, so if we don't like – the reason they don't like RBIs for people are like, why wouldn't you like runs batted in? The idea is because it's circumstantial that right. the runners are on base. And in theory, baseball analytics likes to believe that every at-bat is the same and that there's no real concept of clutch or something right. else.
I
got to tell you, having played the game, I played a little in college. I wasn't good. I mean, by that time I was a pitcher when I had a California zip code as an ERA, so really I wasn't good
sure.
at all. But there's totally something to hitting differently with runners on base and how the defense is positioned and how you approach at-bats. And so I wonder what the basketball equivalent is.
Well, it's the hot hand theory, right? Which I completely believe the hot hand exists because I have felt it before. This is probably also a reason I like high volume scores. I'm a gunner myself. Like I can't really do anything anymore, but I can still shoot, and I shoot from deep. And so that's something where like playing with some Jazz Twitter people this past weekend, and pulled up on a 3-on-1 fast break from three because I knew I was going to hit the shot. And so it's situations. Of course I did.
Okay.
And so there was also a game winner where I had a 1-on-2, but the defenders were far away, and Tony Jones was one of the defenders back. And so I
drew. It was a 2-on-1 with you and Tony Jones. No one was ever going to see the ball.
No, he was the defender.
Oh, okay.
It was 1-on-2. So it was just me with the ball on a leak out. And Tony was the closest defender. And so I pretended to dribble in. I dribbled back out to the three-point line. I waved him over to come guard me, and I hit the shot to win the game. But stuff like that, that's why I love gunners. I love the gravitas of it all. I love the bravado of it all. But I think that the hot hand theory, I think it's true because I think I don't think it's this shot went in, so the next shot's going in. I think it's all about confidence. And that's why I believe the confidence of a clutch situation in baseball or basketball, I think that exists, and I think all that stuff matters.
I would take it to a tee box. I'm not a great golfer, but
sure.
just to take it to a tee box, that when you're hitting the ball well, you go and you hit another one well until you don't hit one well, and then you start to try to correct and
mm-hmm.
try to think things, and then you start shanking,
right.
and then when you go to the tee box, worrying about the fact that you pulled the last three to the left, and now you're going to push one to the right, and then
right.
I think that's no different. I think that – so in that whole sense, there's
right.
to take – and so what – is there – this – I've was not prepared for this, so I don't have an answer either. So if the RBI is the issue in baseball that probably still actually has some value, but that all the analytics geeks tries to claim it doesn't, do we have the same thing in basketball where we have tried to disvalue something that actually has probably still has some value?
I mean the mid-range shot?
Well, so fighting groupthink, 40%, no matter what you do. I mean, the Rockets are, I think, up at 74% of their shots are either restricted area
right.
or threes. But generally, 40% of your shots are still going to be mid-range shots. Like, if you're better than your opponent at 40% of your shots, you're going to be really good.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I'm a little biased now because I've watched Karl Anthony Towns closely all year. Like, that's, you know, Timberwolves are the team I've always followed. Like, that's kind of the guy that I'm most excited about in the league right now, and he's hitting like I don't know, like 45% of his mid-range shots.
Higher.
Yeah, okay, higher than that. In the month of March, he was
just
like
prepped him last week.
Okay,
we just played him. So.
You know, he's a guy who I don't think he'll take a ton of mid-range shots as he gets deeper into his career, but when it's there, it's not automatic, but it feels automatic. Like you're surprised when he misses one. LaMarcus Aldridge, who I've never been a huge fan of, but you got to admit, like if he's hitting 48% of those 16 to 23 foot shots. That's a good percentage of a high volume of shots that he's taking.
League averages below 1 point per possession once
yeah.
you get in the half court possession. So if you're hitting mid range shots at 50%, it's better than what the league average is on
right.
that possession.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I'm a big I love above average.
Yep.
Remember
right,
that.
Exactly.
That's right. I like above average. I'll explain that theory to you sometime. Anyone who's heard PAC, which
right.
is my numerical thing, PAC is all based on just getting a roster full of above average players.
Yeah.
All right, I want to ask you about two players before we wrap this up.
Okay.
One from your fandom and one from your coverage.
Sure.
Brian Windhorst did a whole piece on the mind of LeBron, but what's your thoughts on just – we've had Michael kind of came and actually, in retrospect, had very little seemingly teammate drama. I mean, the stories are out later about him punching Steve Kerr and him getting a fight, and then there's the great ping pong story about Horace Grant about, like, I don't care what we do for training camp, but I'm going to be able to beat him in ping pong this year. And Brad Sellers supposedly actually outrode him on a bike once, so Michael had to then go get a bike. I mean, Michael was crazy.
Right.
And then we have Kobe, who has kind of – the one thing that's interesting is as much as he's tried to claim in this whole route that, like, oh, well, Shaq and I should have got along better, he actually has done the exact opposite and said, no, clearly I pushed him out because I had to prove that I was going to win a title. Right. And now we have LeBron. Like, what's your thought on just kind of this group of these elite players? We had Duncan, frankly, deserves to be mentioned in this group, who just kind of chilled because he's – you know, started as a swimmer and then got scared of sharks.
Right.
Right. So there's these four guys, and they're all kind of on their own spectrum. One was probably – Michael was probably the craziest of them all and seemingly avoided problems. And then Kobe, you have – everyone has their opinions, and Duncan's the mellow, chill guy. So what's LeBron? Like, you covered him. You were around him in Miami. Where do you put LeBron on the spectrum?
He's – I honestly think he's overly calculating at all times. I think he thinks too. He claims he doesn't know any, you know, the coverage or whatever, but he knows everything. And I think that part of that is him seeking it out. I think part of it is people around him bringing it to him. But I think he knows every criticism. He knows what everyone's saying at all times, and he tries to outthink us in what we will do next and how we criticize him, how we analyze him, whatever. And because of that, I think he's almost in his own head too much. Not in a, oh, he's going to collapse, he's going to choke kind of way. I think he overthinks things. He's such a basketball genius on the court, but I think it's in a similar way to how Dwight Howard wants to post up a lot, because Shaq called him out and said, you can't post up, when Dwight Howard is this monster pick and roll option at all times. And because of that, it's hurt Dwight Howard's career. I don't know that it's hurt LeBron's career to overthink things, but I think we're in a situation with him where he's going to end up maybe like this generation's Jerry West, where like he just goes to a bunch of finals. He doesn't really win that many. You know, West was like 1-8. LeBron's 2-whatever, and he might end up being 2-8 by the time it's all over. And that's not going to be good enough for us, but that's still like, that's a crazy successful career, right? But because he's not Michael Jordan in terms of just individual accomplishments and all that stuff, it's going to be a failure. And I think because of that, that bothers him, and that causes him to overthink things.
It's really interesting. Really interesting. So as you said that, I've covered two guys in my career who knew they were going to be stars at a very early age. Mm-hmm. Carlos Boozer was one of them. I think with his Alaska background, sure, he knew he was going to be a star. The other that's probably a better analogy to LeBron was Alex Rodriguez. And I spent a lot of time with Alex Rodriguez. And the one thing that struck me the entire time I was with A-Rod in Seattle, he had no idea who he was. That he had been managed from such an early age that he had no idea. And if you watch his life since, it's been very clear that that was the case.
Yeah.
Do you think LeBron knows who he is?
Yeah, I think he knows who he is to – I think he knows who he is within his group of people. I'll say that. I think he knows how to command situations. I think he knows how to manipulate situations. I think that's why the whole Miami thing was not all that comfortable for him, is because Pat Riley knows who he is way more than LeBron knows who he is. And that's a, you know, kind of bang foreheads together. You mentioned Tim Duncan. I think he's the fascinating, you know, kind of juxtaposition there of like – Duncan definitely knows who he is. He's beyond secure with who he is, has been forever. And yet we kind of overlook him in these ways of maybe not having this competitive fire. Like I watched him in the 2014 NBA Finals up close. That guy had a crazy fire inside of him, like a crazy fire inside of him. I think all these other great players like LeBron have this. I think Duncan is secure in using that fire to his best abilities. And I think that's a tough thing for a lot of stars to come to grips with, because you're so much more competitive than everyone else in your life. I think that, and then you get around all these other people who are maybe just as competitive. I think it's a weird thing to deal with.
I don't know if you've read the book. You don't have kids, so you probably haven't read it, but there's a book out called Mindset, which is fabulous in it, to, you know, do it an injustice, but try to paraphrase it to some or summarize it. The idea is, you know, there's two different kinds of mindsets. There's a fixed mindset, which is I am who I am and I'm great, and you know, this is why I am, and this is, and if I can't do something, well, it's just because I can't do it, and I'm great. And that's who I believe Kobe to be. Now, right. To some extent, I was talking to Jackie McMullen on one of these past podcasts, which you, if you haven't heard it, you should go back and listen to it on Locked On NBA, because Jackie McMullen is, you know, walks on water.
She's the best.
And she disagreed with me because he went to go see Olajuwon, and I kind of with her on some of it, but I still think he is a very fixed mindset player. He never adapted. He only would play this number one King Pua rule. He's torpedoed the Lakers' entire franchise because he had to be the man. And then there's the growth mindset, which is you're always looking at how to get better. And if I don't know how to do something, how, and if my skills change, then how do I adapt? Right. And I think Duncan is the ultimate example of the growth mindset superstar. And I don't know where LeBron fits in that. You know, Duncan has gone from being the rookie to under Robinson to the man, and David Robinson evidently must have been somewhat of a willing participant
right.
as well. I talked to Vince Carter about this concept just to babble for a second. He was really interesting about it because I think Vince Carter is a great example of growth mindset. I mean, this was the man,
yeah.
And now he loves the game enough. He's figured out how, he says it's been so hard and so difficult for him, but he talked about how Tracy McGrady couldn't do it.
Right.
And there's a bunch of guys in the league, if you go look, that just kind of disappeared because they couldn't do it. Antoine Jameson, he talked about, couldn't handle being anything but 17 points a game. So where do you think LeBron fits into this kind of idea of a fixed mindset versus a growth mindset?
Is it a cop-out to say in the middle? Because I think he's in – I think
– the author would say so because she has to sell a book.
Right,
but I
exactly.
might believe that there's something to
it. I think it's – we get into so much of like, are you the alpha, the beta, are you the growth or the fixed mindset or whatever. I think there are people who are just in the middle trying to figure out, well, what if I was just selfish and I decided that I want to do all this stuff? And then they're conflicted because it's, well, no, that's not really the great way to go about that because you're supposed to do this, you're supposed to do this. I think LeBron gets caught up in, I'm supposed to act this way because I have this level of greatness. And I think that is a tough thing to navigate. Just in terms of being a person, being a leader, being a, you know, living up to expectations, like that's a lot of crap to have to deal with on an hourly basis.
He's gonna wish he had a gambling issue and had to take 2 years off. By the way, I don't know if people noticed, but he has been superhuman for about the last 30 days, maybe 20 days. If LeBron keeps playing like this, Cleveland actually could win this thing. LeBron is playing the I can take a game over and win it level of basketball that he played a few years ago. He is really good right now.
He's amazing. I mean, if he can get the rest of the guys on board, of not even they have to play at a championship level, they just can't be a detriment, he could really do some special things.
All right, final question. I'm going to your Timberwolves.
Sure.
Your favorite, your love. And this player has just not been talked about this year at all, but I think he's a really interesting case. Who is Andrew Wiggins? And how good is Andrew Wiggins? And is he – I mean, I thought he was – like, I believe he could be – you know, on the pinnacle. And then I got to say, we've played him 4 times, and he's left me yearning every single time I've seen him this year.
I think he's incredible. I really do. Like, I think he has problems tracking the ball off the ball when he's defending. I think he's still working on his handle, which will give him more security in passing and jump shots. But I think for the most part, you look at where he is, he didn't have a leap this year. He's kind of just had a little bit of a step forward. But I think because he's not a good dribbler, that's what's to be expected. I think that takes a couple of years to work on when you get to the NBA level. He's already so much better passer in the pick and roll than he was last year. That's a huge improvement for what they're going to need to do moving forward, whether Sam Mitchell's the coach or not. But he's getting to be more of a comfortable playmaker. And when that happens, then you have to hesitate against him. And when you have to hesitate against him, his athleticism is off the charts. Like, I think – I thought this last year. Some people may think it's crazy now, but – it didn't seem so crazy last year. Like, I think his floor is Paul George. I think that's how good he'll be. That is his floor, assuming he doesn't have a major injury. They have a similar game. Paul George is a better shooter at this point than Andrew Wiggins was. But in terms of how they attack, ball handling and all that stuff, they're kind of at the same level, you know, when you're comparing the ages. And defensively, like, this guy still, he has guarded the best perimeter scorer on the other team for a bad team his entire career so far. Both seasons, it's been go stop Jimmy Butler, go stop Chris Paul, go stop James Harden, go stop all these guys. He does a pretty decent job against those guys, and he doesn't really know what he's doing, and he's in a bad defensive system, and he's in with bad defensive players, and he's still pretty good at it. I think that once they become a decent team, and all that is going to stem from Karl-Anthony Towns, who is an amazing player already and who will be a top 10 player pretty quickly. Top 10 player pretty
top
quickly.
What?
He will be the top 3 player in 4 years. Like, he's going to be.
He is awesome.
He's unbelievable. Like, the only. I actually have a huge thing on him Friday on CBSSports.com, so check that out if you don't mind. The only thing he's not good at is outlet passing. And he has recognized this and worked on it for the last couple of weeks so that he will not have any more outlet passes picked off. Like, he is completely aware of who he's supposed to be and what he is. But it will be his team. Andrew Wiggins will then be asked to be the number two guy. And as a number two guy, he is going to kill.
No, they're
going to
be great. If they can get a coach, they'll be great.
If they can get a coach,
it's
exactly.
It's so interesting because I am the last person to board the Paul George plane.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I haven't boarded it yet. I'm still not.
By the way, he has not been good since December.
Maybe November.
I mean, he's shooting under 40% since December 1st.
All right, so this is 42 minutes and I'm not done. So this is my greatest thing I can't figure out in the league right now. It has to do with, this is a little Utah-centric. We have Gordon Hayward sitting here.
Right.
Who is probably not a top 15 player in the league. He will not make an All-NBA team. Might be top 20. Might be awfully close. And he's being asked to carry the load on his team with very little surrounding him, frankly.
Right.
I mean, Rodney Hood's a nice player, but he's a second player. Derek's a nice player. But there's, okay, people got it. Look at the Jazz roster. Gordon's on an island. And everyone has decided that Klay Thompson is better than him. And everyone's decided that Kawhi Leonard's better than him, and he probably is because he's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
And everybody's decided Jimmy Butler's better than him. And everyone's decided that Paul George is better than him. And I'm just not sure of it. And the reason is because Paul George is the only other one who's trying to carry the load of his team without any other support. And Paul George is not better than Gordon Hayward this year. He's just not.
Yeah, I agree with that for sure.
And you know what? I really wonder if Klay Thompson had to play the role of Gordon Hayward, whether he'd be anywhere near as good.
He can't do that.
And I love Kawhi Leonard. I think he's unbelievable, and his progression is great. He's playing with 4 Hall of Famers, okay? And who with Jimmy Butler, Pau Gasol is pretty good still.
Yeah.
Like, it's a really interesting group to me, and I just think that burden of carrying the load is bigger, and some of these other guys might be a little, not Kawhi. Kawhi's probably on his own planet at this point. But a little bit overvalued.
Yeah, I think Kawhi is probably undervalued at this point. I'm also a San Diego State guy. Like, I'm huge on Kawhi. I love him. He's one of my favorites. But Paul George thing is interesting. I definitely think Gordon's better than Klay Thompson. Jimmy Butler, you could convince me that Gordon's better than Jimmy Butler. I think you put Gordon on that Bulls team. Are they any worse? I'm not sure that they are.
I think it's interesting. I mean, all of a sudden, the big news is that Fred Hoiberg's going to put the ball in Jimmy Butler's hands. Like, okay, well, Gordon's been carrying the ball every day for the whole year.
Right.
I mean,
that's why Rodney Hood's been such a revelation as he's really progressed this year, is because now all of a sudden there's another ball handler who can create off a pick and roll, right? Now Gordon doesn't have to completely do it, so maybe he can kind of freelance a little bit more and use more of his abilities, you know, in these easier situations for him. If you can have an extra guy like that. I mean, if you put Gordon Hayward with Steph Curry, how good is Gordon Hayward, right? He's an all-star.
I also believe, by the way, in pick and rolls involving anybody but the point guard.
Yes, absolutely.
And I really believe in the 4-5 pick and roll.
It's what I want the Clippers to do constantly. Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, 4-5 pick and roll. Yeah. It murders.
It murders.
Yeah.
There was one other note on Gordon Hayward I was going to share as we wrap this up. So I got a note today. Preparing for, and number one in the league, defense against small forwards is the San Antonio Spurs.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, because they have Kawhi Leonard. And I think number three in the league was Memphis. Of course, they have Tony Allen.
Sure.
And I don't, off the top of my head, remember who 4 and 5 were, but they made complete sense. And you know who number two is?
Utah?
The Utah Jazz. Wow. Gordon Hayward is holding small forwards to less points than anybody other than Kawhi Leonard in the NBA.
He can move. He's big. He's quick. He's smart.
He's strong.
He's very strong. And he uses all of that to, like, he doesn't get beat off the dribble that often unless he's funneling a guy into Rudy Gobert, right? And then it's all by design. Like, he's a very good defender.
All right, we'll end this on the Gordon Hayward Live.
Sure, let's do it.
That is Zach Harper at Talk Hoops on Twitter, CBSSportsLine.com is where he'll make money if you – or no, CBS Sports. CBS Sports. That was old.
Well, we do have a SportsLine.com where I do power ratings, which is all computer-generated, and then I just make fun of the computer.
Oh, I like
so
that.
So there's that as well.
Okay, CBSSports.com. And this is a big week for CBSSports.com, the
Huge.
Biggest week of the year. So read Zach Harper this week while you're checking out everything else as they promote it all week long on that little golf tournament thingamabobber. I remember when if you were a stock player, you always used to buy CBS Sports line when it was a stock
right.
in February and sell it during the Masters week. Not saying I ever did such a thing on a quick trade, but it worked a few years. On that little note, I'm now Motley Fool too. Follow Zach at Talk Hoops. This has been Locked on NBA. Remember to use the promo code LOCKED. Thank you very much.